When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Real quick, the things that Jonnet learned during that meeting, what were they?
It was mostly her asking you questions, the Bandit Queen
also,
talking.
Gotta start asking more questions.
Yeah. You know, when these characters are in front of you, feel free to ask questions and invasive ones, you know? It may be useful to you later.
Super personal. Too personal. Like, ask them uncomfortable questions.
How often do you wax? So we find ourselves, we've done through the morning. The morning, Gable and Travis had an emotional chat and Jonnet had brunch. We are now in the early noon period, just about to be afternoon. I want to know, where is your group gathered?
Maybe Dref's
office.
Office, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Well, yeah, we're supposed to be cleaning, right?
And also, I feel like we probably shouldn't hang out in the captain's quarters anymore. Which is kind of where we usually just hung.
Yeah. I think then we start at like the small, basically porthole window that Dref had in his medical office. We can see out that window that there are more and more ships rolling into port, and some of them are actually anchored alongside Ungoni or sailing in holding patterns around it. All of these ships bear different markers and flags, but each of them shares one flag in common, and that is the flag of the Tempest Armada. There are smaller vessels that are sailing in and out, bringing representatives of different ships from around the Tempest fleet. There is a long procession of people who are in wild-ass anime-style pirate costumes. Each of them looks like a distinct hero of their own shonen story, or perhaps
a lot of
cool Naruto side character.
And twice as long coattails.
Yeah. The hair is spiky as well as colorful.
Just irresponsible.
There are bandanas, locks of hair, eye patches, all concealing one eye from the world because they each have heterochromatic eyes. When they reveal the other color, their powers will truly be unleashed.
There's okay, from every single ship that pulls into port, like at the same moment, there's like six different bandanas that go flying off of the side of the ships that just kind of flutter down to the earth because
and
all the
like
different
a
captains.
Six way split screen, like
yes,
yeah. There is the people of Ungoni have put out like a basket that says free bandana dry cleaning on it. That's a service that they just offer.
And then there's like a harder than appropriate rock band on every single ship supplying the theme music.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's always sunset.
They're there are one or two ships that are doing slow, contemplative J-pop songs as their episode have just ended with them arriving at Ogoni. But yeah, we take all that in from the tiny, tiny window that Dreyf had in his medical quarters.
It's a cacophonous.
And we can see the captain's council, or the captain's council plus Travis Madigo, sort of milling around in this area. You said cleaning? What's everyone doing?
I guess sorting through some more of Dreff's stuff, and Jonnet probably has maybe another book that he's maybe leafing through, and probably like mid-conversation just like, and she is somewhere out there with the Tempest Armada. She could be on one of these ships right now. My sister. And it's just one of the, she needs to find her own thing. All right. And this is my thing. And
he's got
maybe like one of the older notebooks from Dreff, and it's like barely held together as is, and he's just kind of gesticulating very wildly with it. The skies are mine. The skies are mine. Well, this is Johnny's sky.
What else is there?
There's land and there's sky, and if she already did land and didn't like it,
she didn't do land.
Interesting. Travis, I'm noticing maybe this is their sibling dynamic and we're only just learning about it ourselves. How old is your sister?
Oh, shit.
69.
Did we decide 69. If she was older or younger?
Oh, my God. This is gonna ripple.
So the sibling dynamic that you have been playing, it sounds like she is younger but close to you in age.
Yeah.
Like, if like you're constantly worried about her having to do her own thing, or she could honestly be a year older than you too, and you've been living in her shadow a little bit, trying to find your own way. Like, both of those, I kind of see it's close no matter what.
I mean, I like the idea that Jonnet is trying to protect a sister that is older than him and truly does not need his protection. And then in doing that, like, becomes weirdly possessive about the sky. I think that's just like a weird character flaw. But I feel like it's younger. I feel like at some point I may have said younger, but I want to go with older because of that. That's a more fun thing to play, I think. And if anyone who's listening, sue me.
No, yeah. We have to take your Patreon money back.
If you've got a problem with us changing it from a younger sister to now an older sister, I think you can suck eggs is what we're learning. Because Tyler gets what Tyler wants.
Well, Travis, let's list all of Jonnet's accomplishments. So that way, Jonnet can feel, even though his sister may be following a similar path, Jonnet is on his own path with his own pursuits and goals and adventures. For example, Jonnet has another eye. Bet your sister doesn't have that.
Yeah.
That's 50% more eyes. That's impressive.
I know. It's just, she's kind of really good at a lot of stuff that she does. And it's natural, all right? And I found some things that I'm good at, okay? But I just want there to be a clear distinction of her lane and my lane.
Understandable.
Well, how many bandanas does she have?
Probably she none. Everyone threw theirs over
she
the
makes
side.
Her own. She makes her own scarves, and they're beautiful, and she sells them. And
Jonnet, is your bandana made by your sister?
Oh, no. And in that, when Travis asks how many bandanas does she have, Jonnet looks up to his eye and then looks down kind of shakes it off and then is like, no, she makes her own, whatever.
Okay, well, I bet she can't even read a map, you know?
Yeah, doesn't even, well, she also is kind of star watching on this new ship. So she's probably learning, and she's probably doing it fast. She's a very quick learner. Oh.
The more you talk about her, it seems as if there's quite a few similarities that are kind of inseparable from each other. It's almost as if you were, like, the exact same story was happening, just in a different place.
I don't know. I haven't seen her.
Does she have a parent or guardian who can change into animals?
I don't know. I haven't seen her. And it's almost as if I'm half expecting some sort of inverted Uhurus type situation when we do finally meet them in the ship.
And a Ruhu.
And a Ruhu. End of episode.
I would like to draw a luminary to see what like things people are finding as they are cleaning here. The drought, misfortune, scarcity, and desperation. As you are cleaning Dreft's things, what kind of unfortunate thing falls out or rolls out of his possessions?
Dreft was familiar with the cutting stone before all of this happened. Like, he was kind of baffled by it in the moment, but, like, he knew of it. I feel like maybe there's, like, a page or two that fall from maybe like this worn journal that when looking at it, it's Dreft's handwriting, but it is visibly like distressed and frantically written. And it probably like, we probably see like cuts of like close up words and scribbles and like cutting stone or something. I don't know, something to that effect.
Ooh, I think actually this is a journal that originally belonged to Dreft's mentor, Dreft's teacher. The person at the university who slowly lured him in and introduced him to medical necromancy as a possibility. And this page is annotated with Dreft's handwriting. So there is kind of that frantic and fearful handwriting in an unfamiliar hand going on about the cutting stone. And it's so much to take in. There's a lot of frantic handwriting, and the lines aren't clear here. They kind of swirl around the page a little bit. There are also some rough sketches of different things. There's one kind of like dark ink and charcoal sketch that Travis will find extremely familiar that looks like many, many points of light in a world of utter darkness that have a hungry and leering quality to them. And the reason Travis finds it familiar is that is the vision that you had when you touched the angel feather all the way back in like episode 11 or whatever.
Oh, I don't care for this. So put it away.
But I mean, maybe we should give it a look over. I don't know.
I've already seen it once, and I don't need to see it again.
Okay. Do you mind if, and then he kind of just like goes to like put it in his pocket. If Dreft thought it was important, maybe it's important.
I'm sure it is.
Well, Dreft thought all kinds of weird things were important.
Travis says that while holding, like, what bizarre tchotchke does Dreft have? Like, there's got to be, like, basically, this is some sort of weird comedy prop that Dreft has always had in the background of, like, the set of his room that we've never explained and people keep speculating about on the forums.
But Travis is pulling a bunch of scarves like tied together out of a drawer. And then like, as he says that line, there's a pair of boxers with hearts on them. And then he just keeps pulling.
I imagine that there was like a couple months where Dreff was trying to patch Adams because someone told him that his bedside manner was so bad.
Oh, yes. Oh,
wow.
Oh, my God.
I'm trying to be gentle and funny. Are you, would you like
laughter
me to wear a rubber
the
nose?
Best medicine.
There's like googly eyes.
Behind
that-
this actual medicine.
Oh, man. Yes. There's like a pair of like googly eyes that kind of like.
Yes. Yeah. Tyler was miming those glasses that have like the eyes with the springs on them. But because this is like a fantasy sort of pirate universe, the device that allows them to do that has to be a lot more rudimentary and therefore horrifying.
They're creaky.
Very steep.
They're too realistic. With that, there is a tapping at the window.
Huh? Oh, don't open it, because this is a character from a different ship. They're searching for a philosopher's stone, and then this is going to go on for like three different episodes. And so, if we just ignore it, we can skip it entirely.
You can see a black raven outside that has like kind of hitched its feet onto the ledge of this little porthole window. It is a very large raven, like maybe, you know, almost twice as big as Travis would be in his raven form. And it's flapping its wings and awkwardly trying to maneuver its head to the window, you know, moving its head back and forth, trying to peer inside. You can see that there is a green velvet collar around its neck, and it's eyeing the room up and down and periodically turning to the window and pecking its beak against it. And of course, there is a small missive tied to one of its feet.
Is this a broker bird?
Is it a broker bird?
There's only one way to find out, and that's to interact with it. And then if it drops dead once we're done, then yes, it was probably a broker bird.
I'm excited, but also worried about the bird. And then he opens the window.
So the bird kind of flaps a bit and, you know, squeezes through the window into the room, sits on the desk and lifts up his leg, sort of presenting it to the room.
Thank you, kind sir. I love your collar. All right.
The bird puffs up a little bit at that.
I think everybody, Jonnet is now holding his breath to see what happens. And the bird's still alive?
Okay. The bird's still alive?
Great. Cool. Excellent. We read it.
There's a monogram on it that you recognize as the Flag of the Glass, which is one of the ships that pulled into port. Notably, you remember because your good friend, Ku Cullen, was on that ship.
That main man!
There is very rough handwriting, again, in a green ink, and it says, urgent meeting needed under captain's orders. Please come to... They mentioned like some location in Ungoni at your earliest convenience. And it's signed Ku. One thing that is notable about this handwriting is it looks almost like a child's handwriting. Okay. Like whatever person wrote this clearly did not care for learning their letters, and there are misspellings abound.
Is he at whose captain orders? Which one? Our captain or glass captain? Which captain?
Liz, keep orders? Asking this question, but do it slower.
going which?
Oh, you're talking to the bird. I see.
No, I'm talking to me. Trying to piece it together in my brain.
I think a thing that I'm going to decide for this bird, because my dog does it, as you're sort of like idly in the room reading the letter, the bird like hops its way over to Gable and sort of maneuvers its beak and head under Gable's hand for pets.
Oh.
So it just sort of like insinuates itself in there, recognizing a bird lover.
Gable gives pets for sure.
Mm-hmm. I think after a few minutes of pets while Gable is like stumbling through the thought of there being two captains, like we could see a little bit of Gable's mind palace of like, you know, there are grids in there and equations and like two captains swirling around each other while they idly pet a bird. The bird eventually decides it's good on pets, squeezes itself through the window and flies out once more.
It's honestly kind of jarring to see a bird deliver a message and stay alive.
Right? It's happened too much.
Sometimes I forget that that's something that they don't have to do.
So this is the main man who we don't like.
That applies to most people.
That's true. But he was particularly nasty to us in like a fun-loving way, in a cool audience favorite sort of way, but still very mean to us.
So I guess the question is, do we give the audience what they want and interact with him? Or do we throw this message out the window and keep on cleaning this room?
The question I was trying to posit is that, are we supposed to be bringing the captain to this meeting? Or is it that our captain is telling us to go there? Or the captain of the glass is telling us to go there? Unclear.
Yeah, I'm hearing it. I'm hearing it now. I guess my thought was we go there at their captain's request.
Okay. Well, I don't have anything on my calendar.
I'm pretty booked, but
you're,
I think
you're
I can...
a snake right now.
What do you got going on?
Do snakes not have calendars?
The scene of Travis pulling the scarves and boxers out of a drawer is way weirder now than I think about the fact that he was a snake that whole time.
We've already established that there are pulleys and whatnot around.
The scarf pulley, yes. I mean, I've got a date with Destiny a little bit later, but I'm free right now. I'm gonna learn to glide.
Oh, okay.
A little bit later. It's gonna be super dope.
It's a fun way to... Okay.
You know, it does occur to you, Jonnet, that that is scheduled at the same time as this big important meeting. You might need the captain's permission to do that instead of meet. You are on the captain's council.
Oh,
Jonnet, this is a great opportunity for us to prepare for your doubtfire. We could shower you with gifts. I don't know why I said
and we can pick out some outfits.
We can do a montage.
Okay, a montage.
Okay. Ooh. Okay. Well, I'm super down to doubtfire, 100%. But should I let the captain know that I'm planning on doubtfiring, or do I just doubtfire? Does someone schedule a doubtfire, or do you just doubtfire? I've never doubtfired before. I'm so nervous.
The thing about doing a doubtfire is you can't tell anyone.
Oh, no. And for no reason either.
Right. That's the thing. It must be.
Because people will probably be fine with it.
Just tell them that you have plans.
Hey heroes, it's James, your game master, and welcome to the midroll. Sorry that we had to delay this episode a little bit, but I just don't like it when Casey stays up too late to edit. The man needs his sleep. In the next couple weeks, we're going to be taking some steps to try and help improve Casey's workflow, and that involves giving him a little time off. We're going to fill that time with one of the rewards we have left over from the end of the year drive at World Builders, and that is All My Fantasy Skyjacks. Jeff Stormer and Aaron Catano-Sayez are going to be joining me to build parts of Sphere live for you on recording. So, I guess not live. Whatever. That's not going to be next week, but it is going to be coming up soon. Those episodes will fill in some juicy lore details for the world, and it will give our dear Casey Tony a chance to get some rest and get ahead on work. I know that sounds counterintuitive, but that's why we're going to be doing 2 weeks instead of one. Another note, this episode we are joined by a guest. You didn't hear him earlier on in the episode because we've actually had him at the last three recordings with me thinking that he was going to join us, but the cast always just falling short of his scene. And that guest is none other than Drew Merzhieski, host of Skyjack's Courier's Call. If you haven't already, I really recommend you go check out Drew's work over at Courier's Call. They are doing some incredible things in the world of Sphere. And also, frankly, you can learn stuff about the world that we haven't addressed in the main series yet. But no matter what, I hope you enjoyed Drew's performance. It was so much fun having him on, and we really appreciate it. Also, if you like Drew, you can check him out on his other actual play show, A Night of Shreds and Patches, or support him and Allie Grauer over at patreon.com/whimsyandartifice. A huge thanks to everyone who supports us on Patreon. Without you, we wouldn't be able to do things like pay someone to sit in on our sessions for three sessions in a row, even if they don't get a chance to contribute. Which probably isn't the wisest way to spend some of that money, but it is helping keep someone employed during COVID, so I think it evens out in the end. Coming up this Friday, we've got the final part of our conversation with Pat Rothfuss and Drew Merzhieski about the first season of Courier's Call, which is a great conversation to listen to if you're into Skyjacks just generally. And, you know, it would be a weird first contact with Courier's Call, but, you know, give it a shot. Finally, before we get back to the episode, I want to remind everyone that very soon we will be in Jonnet Week. March 8th through the 14th, fans of the Skyjacks podcast have put together a wonderful fan project to celebrate everyone's favorite 15-year-old Sky Pirate. There's going to be fan art, fan fiction, and all sorts of cool fan works. And if you want to get involved, all you have to do is head to jonnetweek.tumblr.com or follow them on Twitter over at jonnetweek. J-O-N-N-I-T, week. Now with all of that out of the way, let's get back in the sky.
Okay. All right. Well, then we're going to need a foolproof disguise that I'm going to be able to quick change in and out of rapidly, yes, multiple times.
But both are you. Both are both still you. You are not different people.
Right?
Okay. That's crucial.
Yes. That's crucial. Sorry. At one point, I thought I was might be British, but no. Great.
If you
okay.
I like where your head's at.
But both people, both parties have seen me, and I was not British when we started, so it'd be more weird now. Okay. All right. Well, then I need something light and something that I can move in, because when I'm gliding, I want to be nimble.
That's smart. How about
I'm thinking breakaway sleeves.
Oh.
Yes.
You have to make sure you have a storage for the sleeves. Otherwise, you'll lose the sleeves, and then you just have a sleeveless shirt.
Okay. Great. Gable, that's why you're on the team. Okay. What if
Thank you.
I have my bag. I got my bag, I rip the sleeves off, and then I put them in the bag.
Uh-huh.
And then when I'm done, then I can just slip them back on.
Okay.
Is Velcro a thing in this world?
Let's say yes.
Okay.
Whoa. I don't think so, folks.
I think so, yeah.
Hang on,
can we roll for Velcro? It can be a daunting roll, but I want to roll for Velcro.
We're gonna pull a luminary. Right. We'll pull a luminary.
You tell
for
my
Velcro.
Tennis shoes I don't have Velcro.
I think Velcro exists, but it is made from animal parts.
Mm.
I was thinking plant parts because I was thinking you could take like burrs. Yeah, it would just need to be. It would be a very difficult thing to construct. You know what? Fine. You get Velcro. Yeah. Again, they're very specialized. It's a very specialized plant. It's very difficult to make, but like Velcro can exist.
We also have TVs.
And basic cable.
Just basic cable, though.
Just basic. Okay. Ooh. Well, if it's only basic cable.
I have a water pick from my mouth.
There's a Comedy Central marathon of Mad TV on. So there's
always
just this procession of racist caricatures.
Oh,
just sort of like constant.
Look, I don't care about the Mad TV marathon. I'm waiting until 10 p.m. when my Dane Cook special comes on. you know I love that hour-long Comedy Central Presents block.
Oh, God. Dane Cook exists, but he's a talking dog.
Great Dane Cook.
Great Dane Cook.
I am into Great
End of
Dane
episode number
I
two.
Was
Let's
not
get the
on
fuck out of
here.
Great Dane Cook.
So yeah. I want a very quick montage of different Jonnet looks for the doubt firing, you know, so we can get what everybody nods or shakes their head at.
Okay.
Well, I think he definitely comes out as Mrs. Doubtfire.
Yeah.
And Gable and Travis both just shake their head.
Big shake of their head.
Yeah. I don't know why this was my first choice. And he goes back out and he comes out. He's in a full suit of armor for like jousting the normal
their
horse
chin,
jousting.
Like, maybe.
And then he pulls up the face mask on the helmet and he's clearly sweating head to toe and he's like, no, no. And then he leaves.
Shaking head.
Yeah, John, it's one thing that John had said is I want to be nimble and does try on the full suit of armor. Good.
He comes back. He's got very much got that one of the anime, like, half jacket, all coattails. And he's kind of, he doesn't know what to do with the super long coattail. So he, like, throws it over his shoulder like a scarf. And he's like, And then he leaves. And he comes back with a modest, kind of nicer, long sleeve shirt. He's got his bandana and poses for a half second. And then he gives everybody like the wait a minute, and then he reaches for both sides of his sleeves and he rips them off, and then he stuffs them in the bag and he's like, ha!
Big thumbs right. up.
They applaud. Right.
Applause.
And then they cheers their champagne that they've
Our
been
champagne.
Drinking this whole
and the
time.
Big hats that we're wearing mm-hmm. that we just found.
It's very important to me, Johnny, to note you did mention applauding, and Travis is a snake, so I just want to know, I can see how the champagne works.
Yeah, and it's, I think that, you know...
He slaps his middle together.
Yeah, it's like the back end of the tail just kind of hitting the middle of the body. I'm sure there's precedent in some media.
You know, like, I don't know when we're going to run out of steam on this. Well, what is it like as a snake game? But for now, I'm loving every minute of it. With that, I'm going to have us cut over to a shot of the location that you were requested to meet.
Oh, wait, real quick.
Oh,
and then
yes.
Right at the very end, as they're kind of like exiting the dressing room of the Uhuru, Jonnet looks down and sees like a pair of red Coke bottle sunglasses and is like, oh, this screams glider. And then, that's that.
That rules. That absolutely rules.
I love that
I have
Jonnet's Doubtfire is just like regular Jonnet and sleeveless Jonnet. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the two choices.
Oh, anime like Jonnet and more
like,
anime Jonnet.
That's good stuff. I mean, the hair between I am on the captain's council of a notorious pirate ship and I am hanging out with cool teens tonight, those are very close mm-hmm. in terms of style and formality. So I would like to cut us to the location that the crew of the Glass has requested that you meet them. And for that, I would like our guest, Drew, to describe.
Real quick. First, we go to the bathroom of the ship where we all...
Yeah. And it's going to take about 45 minutes and
Each.
Yes. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Bathroom Barry immediately stops mm-hmm, you. Because
he's been working
saying,
on a musical
I got...
and he's got to try out his first opening number.
He's quartermaster right now, and he's also Bathroom Barry and also working on a musical.
Oh, yeah,
this
he's
man.
Got life when he's not on screen.
Most confident person on the boat.
I'm so curious what's about. What's the rising action?
You're going to have to wait till opening night. Oh, you're gonna have to wait. Some, he's got some great talent in the lead.
Can't be urine town.
Oh, could be urine town. Yeah, for sure. So yeah, Drew, what does this area look like?
I imagine it's on the docks.
Okay.
There is a small pub on the docks. It is actually, I feel like there's a bunch of berths, a bunch of places where the ships kind of pull themselves into. And this pub is out on a jetty, just kind of hanging out at the very edge.
Oh, it must be like kind of a pop-up place.
Yeah.
Like when the docks are super populated. Because earlier, I think one of the issues that we were dealing with is that there wasn't a place for the crew to go unwind in Ungoni. And that's why the whole Jolly Jack negotiation happened. But if they like put up this temporary bar when the docks are just full of ships, like that makes absolute sense.
Yeah, it's like, it's one of those pop-up places that's mostly tent. It's not like a like an edifice that's been built there. It's like tents and awnings that have been put up and like makeshift seats. It's hopping right now. There's a ton of people in here. I think it's mostly the crew of the Glass is in here.
Oh, I think they're going to get stopped right before they go in.
Yeah. Like, so we as can you, see it in the distance just hopping.
Yeah. You see like all of these pirates, like so many anime people mingling in and out of these tents, these different sections. And in front of them, you can see Ku Cullen, who, again, is this kind of androgynous-looking person who is absolutely yoked, just bulging with muscle, covered in woad tattoos. He's got dark red hair, but in the front, he has this patch of like rainbow highlights. His hair has been like pulled back into a ponytail with still some like loose strands on the side because like you can only contain his wildness so much. He looks pretty uncomfortable right now because he's been made to wear a shirt, it looks like. He's constantly like tugging at it and pulling at it. Like there is still like a wide, deep V to it, but like every part of it looks like he is uncomfortable with, and he is wearing a kilt too. These are clearly his Sunday best clothes, if you will. He's got a rather large and impressive spear that is like slung along his back. He's kind of like nervously sort of tugging at that as well. Eventually, he sees your group approaching and he does a quick wave and runs right up to you.
Hi. First of all, thank you. Thank you for coming. You didn't have to. Definitely appreciate that you did.
What? Is everything all right? You're looking more nervous and dressed than the last time we've seen you.
Hey, well, I'm in a wee bit of trouble, so I am here to give to you an apology for my behavior. So, this is not it. This isn't it. There's like a whole thing. I've got to do it in front of my captain. He feels bad. He feels quite bad about the whole situation. I told him about it, and I thought, oh, this will be a bit of a laugh. And he was a wee bit mad, I'd say, across, perhaps. And so I had to write a letter to you to invite you here to say I'm sorry, but again, this is not it. This is not it. I have to do it in front of my captain. There is a slight wrinkle that I'd like to talk to you about a little bit. Captain's a great man. Great man. Stand-up man. Look up to him. Basically raised me. Great guy. He has a condition that he's a bit sensitive about.
Okay.
And he's in one of what we gently call on the ship his periods of affliction. as they were.
Okay.
Right now. And, you know, we've got the meeting tonight. He should be fine by tonight. But right now, he's not himself, as it were. And this is obviously a situation where we owe you an apology. But seeing as how we're in a bit of a diplomatic scenario, I didn't want there to be any sort of misunderstandings or mentioning of Captain's condition while we're in the meeting, because I think that would just make it a lot more awkward for everyone.
I find your cryptic nature to be both intriguing and familiar.
Okay, well, that's good. That's so. We're running out of time because everyone's gonna have to get ready for the meeting tonight.
You're the one over here qualifying. Come on.
No, I know. I know. I'm so bad at this. I want to tease you so bad. You're just such a teen, and you take things so seriously, and it's hard to keep in, isn't it?
Reel it back. You gotta reel it back. Otherwise, yeah, you're gonna be here all day.
Yeah.
We got things to do.
So, okay, we're going to lead the captain out. You'll know when he's getting let out. Everyone's going to make a big deal of it, aye?
Let out?
Well, I mean, lead him out, because you're gonna meet the rest of the crew there. You know, we'll give you your drinks. We'll lead him out, and you'll greet him, and then we'll be able to issue the apology and put all this behind us. Just please act like it's normal. Act like it's normal.
Okay. All right.
I think
we're cool.
Yes.
We're chill.
We have a tremendous capacity for treating unusual things as everyday.
That's a lovely snake.
Yes, it is. Let's keep moving.
Well, thank you. I tend to agree.
Gable puts two hands over his head.
Ku turns and leads you into, like, I imagine there's a private sort of tented area. And Drew, please describe this room.
So I feel like there's a very large pavilion and small satellite pavilions that have come up around it. And I also imagine that there's nets that are underneath this whole thing that kind of, because people will get drunk and fall off.
Oh, yeah.
And they land to the net. So every so often, as you guys are coming up, there's a... somebody just leans over and falls over into the net. And everybody laughs and points at them as they have to, like, crawl their way out. But one of these satellite pavilions, as you guys get close to it, it's full of people. It's full of crew of the glass. They're all kind of wearing their best coats and breeches, and some of them are in, like, Irish, like, they're called tams. They're, like, bonnets that kind of go off to the side. They're beanies, basically. Mm. And the other thing you notice is that they're all wearing flowers. They have, like, flower garlands or flowers in their hair or, like, braided in their beards or in their hair. And everyone's just having a great time. They're singing songs. As you guys come in, everyone's like, hey, as they, like, look at Ku, and you guys are ushered quite quickly through this line as they're, like, singing songs and dancing with you guys as they bring you to a table that is set for you guys.
In this procession, you get each handed big mugs of ale, are basically shoved into Gable and Jonnet's hands. There are flowers being thrown up in the air. And the crowd of people, I think, quickly moves to the side to create basically like a walkway in front of your table. Ku quickly runs out to fan in with the captain's council of the glass. You can see Ku is like close to the end of the line. At the top of the line, we have, who's the quartermaster?
That's Bodica.
Okay. Please describe Bodica for us, Drew.
So the first person that comes in is a woman, probably like 6'5", 6'6", big woman, broad-shouldered. She's got her sleeves like rolled up so you can see she's got massive forearms. Her hair is this blonde that's been braided in like 100 different braids together that have flowers through it. And she's wearing like a really nice short coat and like an under jerkin on that with breeches, but she's barefoot completely. The other thing you notice is that on her face, she's got war makeup on. Like half of her face is painted green. And there's like a design put through, like, so from nose up is green and from nose down is just regular. And she comes in and the crew's like, Boudica, Boudica, Boudica. And they're like, ah, she comes in and like, she picks up two people together and like hugs them and then throws them off. And they're like, yeah.
Behind her slinking into the room in procession, there is a woman who, you know, it's hard to determine her age, but she is much, much shorter. She is like maybe 5'4", 5'3". She has wild hair. It is pitch black. And, you know, it's one of those situations where this is either someone has just rolled out of bed or someone has spent 3 hours teasing their hair to get it just so. But it is this wild shock of braids and thick black strands that are sticking up at different ends. She, too, is wearing makeup. She's got, like, dark eyeliner and lines running up and down her face. She is in a dark black dress that looks like it has bright green cords that are holding it together. She has her nails painted a dark black, and her fingers look like they are either with tattoos or dyed to be dark and black against her pale skin. There is less fanfare and chanting for this one. There's like kind of a respectful silence. Some nervous crew members shove each other until Ku calls from the back, Ayat's Morrigan! She'd be Star Watcher! She looks at the table and winks at, we'll say, Gable. Because Travis is a snake currently. She, like, gets on the opposite side of Boudica in this procession.
And I think what happens now is the hurdy-gurdies begin to play.
Oh, no!
And, yeah, dude.
And the crew kind of silences down, and in comes a girl about 14 years old. Obviously, she's a part of the crew. She's got like flowers as well, but she looks like she's worn. She's like a kid on the boat. She's got like a slouch cap on as she comes on. She's got a basket full of flowers that she's like throwing out as she begins this procession. And she comes all the way down and she gets to your guys' table and she like bows very graciously and like throws flowers over you guys and then moves over to the side. And then in comes a man, probably a man like red hair, doesn't really matter. What he's holding is a rope. And he moves to the side and in comes the captain. And the captain is a pig. He is reddish in color and like furry. He's big. It's a big, big pig. And he's got like a cape. He's got like a coat that's been laid over the top of him. And like a flower garland around his neck. And as the man reaches down and like unhooks like the rope. And the pig moves in. You see that his hooves are polished and that there's obviously like woad war paint painted on his snout as he comes on in. His tuft of hair off the top of it has been coiffed and like moved to the side in an artistic way. And as he moves down towards you guys, the crew takes their caps off and hats, and they're like, Captain, hey, Captain.
Yeah, everybody takes their hats off their head, and like, I think a couple of them take a knee. Or actually, yeah, the crowd like slowly takes a knee around as the captain gets led through, at which point Ku kind of emerges from the back of the crowd. Ku has a cap as well that, like, he clearly didn't put on until all of this started, and he just, like, snatches it off his head now and shakes his hair free a little bit because he feels more comfortable with that. And he's, like, carrying his hat in both of his hands kind of nervously and scrunching it with his fingers as he goes. As he stands in front of you guys, like, next to the captain, and he, like, kind of looks down at the pig, and the pig looks back at him. And, you know, sure, like, animals are difficult, right? They don't work the way humans do. But if a pig could look stern, it is this one. It sort of shoots a glance back and, like, coo. This very powerful, very strong man with this wild spear slung across his back shrinks like a flower. and he, like, sort of drifts down. All right, so I'm sorry. I was not conducting myself in the way that a man should. In front of a group such as this. These are the Captain's Council of the Uhuru. We have John Kessler, the Star Watcher, a teen. And
there's a, this teen.
Yes, I am a teen.
And we have Gable.
No
last name.
No, you don't need to, just the one.
Gable mononym.
No.
Gable. Who's the helms person? And this crew took down the civility, amongst other accomplishments, alongside Oromar Vale. And I was a bit of a shit.
And I think the rest of the crew, pig, there's a moment where the rest of the crew all echo, bit of a shit.
The pig drifts its snout over and grabs the bottom of Ku's kilt and, like, tugs on it a little bit. Ku, like, steps back and, like, swats the kilt away. All right, a rather large shit. Just a huge pile of absolute shite. And I would like to offer you an apology, not just on my own behalf, but on behalf of our captain, Brian.
The pig kind of sits down and kind of truffles, like, snorts about a little bit, and then looks expectantly at Ku.
Would you like to accept our apology and... after that, we can all be mates and go on to do this big meeting tonight and be fine together.
Jonnet lets this
Gable does a
hang.
Sidebar with Jonnet.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, we're we're going to let it hang and then we kind of do a sidebar together. Just like, so the captain's not talking.
Yeah, pig captain. Yeah, captain's a pig.
It's pig captain.
Well, that's not. That's not so weird.
Yeah, no, it's not a change because it's not talking.
I kind of like it.
Yeah,
so it's a different thing. I think it's a different. I think it's fine. But also, I just want everyone to be like, oh, we're all on the same page. It's like, this is unusual, but it's not that bad, right?
Yeah, yeah. I think we're. Yeah, we can all sign up.
I don't know what you're. I'm a snake.
See, when he said the captain had affliction, I thought he was going to be like a pile of goo.
Yeah, I thought he had organ. Like,
why is that? Eczema. Why is that less weird?
A pile of goo? Well, that's yes. Harder. Like, pig is a thing that exists. Pile of goo that's sentient with organs.
You want
in it.
You want a pile of goo? I'll get you a pile of goo. Give me 20 minutes. I'll get you a pile of goo.
What is that threat? What is that even? What is that even as a threat, Travis?
I'm just saying.
Where do you have access Gable to seems... goo? Are you going to make the goo? Are you going to procure the goo?
I've got a guy.
A goo guy?
Who's the guy?
You got a goo guy?
Ku is trying desperately to make eye contact with y'all and mouthing, pretend it's normal.
Are we all good? Are we all good?
Yeah, we're good. Yeah, we're good.
Yes, I've been good the whole time.
Accept your apology. Thank you. The end.
The crew erupts in a yay.
Wait, wait, it's not official yet, is it?
Oh.
Ku turns to the captain.
The captain looks at all of you, turns around, and you see their squiggly little tail, and then just stands there. And there's a long pause where someone goes, "You have to kiss the ring."
Why, someone's got to kiss the ring?
You have to kiss the ring.
Someone, one of us has to? We didn't do anything wrong. Is this an honor or a punishment?
Is the pig wearing a ring?
On the tail, there is a gilded ring.
A butt ring.
Many, many jewels.
I'll do it. I'll do it.
All right, so we return once again to the long line of prospective applicants in front of the skyship Uhuru. We see a young man walk off the line. He looks to be moderately overweight, about 19 years old, and he's got long, dark, curly hair and very wide, expressive eyes. He sort of nervously shuffles over to the table and places down a headshot and resume in front of Travis specifically and goes to sit on the stool.
Okay, please state your name.
My name is Barry, but you can call me Raz.
Why would I do that?
Oh.
Well, my last name is Rasputin, but I prefer something fun.
Okay.
Hey, Raz. Welcome, welcome to the ship. What is your current occupation, and what are you vying for?
Well, I'm kind of making my way out of, let's call it a cult. And I want to explore the world outside and really see what's possible. I come from a very, very religious family and have recently come to understand some things about myself. And I feel like piracy might suit my lifestyle better than being in the cult.
And why? This is going to sound maybe not as rude as I would like it to, but why me?
Hmm?
Why me? Why did you give it to me, the headshot and resume?
Oh, I just put them on the table. I didn't give them to you. I mean, if you're implying a connection between us, I'm willing to explore that for
well,
sure.
Well, no, it was just a very deliberate choice.
I mean, you brought up the connection. There's a big table here. I just put my headshot and resume down there, and all of a sudden, I'm sensing some vibes from you, and, you know, I'm receptive to those vibes, and we can explore what those vibes might mean.
Well, also,
and,
when you walked up to the table, you walked past Gable, past me, past the captain, walked back to Gable, then past Gable again, and then went to Travis. You specifically sought out Travis.
Who's to say what did or didn't happen?
We saw. I did see it.
And I'm at a different table.
He's because at the bad boy table.
I barely even want to do this.
Why is he part of it, actually, now that I think of it?
You know, I've kind of decided that my role is to be sort of less involved in the actual process and more just providing sort of biting commentary as I see fit.
Oh, that's
and
like
I think
show,
it would be,
huh?
I would be very good in that kind of role, being sort of very critical of things as they go on, and you know, delivering one-liners.
Mm. No,
so are you coming for Travis's spot?
No, I feel like we would be a good pair. Maybe I could be a Statler to his Waldorf.
What?
Well, here's the thing. We don't, the crew is already mad enough at Travis in any given day. And I think having two Travises, wouldn't
Travises.
Travises, thank you. wouldn't necessarily
travesties.
Help. And at this point, we're trying to boost morale, not tank it.
Yeah, mitigate some damage. Wait, so what was your full name again?
My name is Raz, is what I would prefer to go by.
That wasn't the question they asked.
Your first name was Barry?
Given correct? Name is Barry.
Raspberry?
Rasputin. Yes.
Raspberry Rasputin.
Well.
Raspberry Rasputin.
I mean, if you can put it that way.
That is the most My Little Pony name.
Well, who's a pony? No one said anyone was a pony.
The way that you said that makes me think that you might be a pony.
Hmm?
Did we stumble onto something here, or
I don't
are
think
you...
so. I think this is like new information that like we created, and mm-hmm. it was a void.
No one here was a pony ever. That's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. Do you realize how you sound right now? It's
okay. Well,
pretty
okay.
silly.
Well,
I wouldn't want to be in your shoes.
Hooves.
Hmm?
Do ponies have to wear horseshoes like horses wear horseshoes?
No, I think they just like go to like little rubbery, like the dolls don't have hooves. They just go straight to foot like elephants.
I mean real ponies.
Real ponies?
Yeah.
Real pony hoof. I don't
but
think
no,
they
but
wear
do,
shoes
But do they
yet.
Have shoes? Hmm. Interesting. You know, I always sort of, and I've never been involved with horses much, but a lot of people who are tend to say, oh, the horses love it, the horses love, you know, being ridden and subjugated, and I feel like that can't be true, right? Horses can't like being sat on by people.
I've heard that horses don't necessarily feel like registered much of the weight of a person, like
huh.
Yeah, but who was telling you that? Was it a person?
It was
or
a person.
Horse?
Oh no,
you're biased
yeah.
because
oh,
you're
no.
a horse. So
yeah.
Oh no, I need to talk to more horses. I need more horses in my friend group. Oh.
So,
and like, here we have an application that I think we should really consider now.
Okay, but like, I want you to be honest. Like, was like the prompt here a little bit like this might be an animal, or are you just like yes-anding me to make me feel better?
Hmm?
He's yes-anding me to make me feel better. Oh, I hate it. I hate it when that happens. So you could say.
Well, I think we should get back to the main issue.
No.
We've flanked around it long enough.
Get close your browser tab that has horse words in it.
It's not necessarily.
I can't or do that.
It's Schrodinger's horse, because until we say it's a horse, it's a horse. But it could be a bear. It could be a bunch of lizards.
Well.
Look, I want to get through this bit as much as you.
Look, if you're a horse, you have to tell us. Otherwise, it's equine entrapment.
As an employer, you're legally not allowed to ask if I'm a horse. That's a rule that I've made up.
Well, if here's the thing, if you're going to be a part of this crew, we're all friends, we're all family, and what does family do? Tell their family if they're horses. So
yes,
is the thing. If you want to do it, then you gotta tell us.
If you're an animal legally, you have to tell us.
Yeah. They gesture to one of those like decorative wooden signs that you see in like vacation homes and Airbnbs that just says, do you always tell your family or family means telling people if you're a horse? All right. You've backed me into it. There's a transformation sequence as Raspberry transforms into kind of a red and magenta pony with a picture of a big raspberry on his flank on either side and just a beautiful flowing mane.
Okay. See, now we know And now we can have the actual interview. So you're a shape-shifting horse.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, I should mention, I can only transform into a person if I've drained them entirely of their blood.
Oh, yeah. That's the Rasputin part. Okay.
Got it. Well,
there we go.
Okay.
Got it.
I don't know anything about Rasputin other than it's, you know, sort of a bad man sounding name.
He was like kind of a horny wizard.
Yes.
Aren't they all?
I mean, yeah, a lot of them. Sure.
Most,
yeah.
Majority of them. Well,
I mean, I'm curious. Go ahead. Go ahead, Gable.
No, I got nothing to say. I feel like we've reached the end of the bit.
I'm curious to see how many. Okay, so here's the thing. I'm going to vote yes.
Okay.
On the condition that you do not get to drain anyone in the crew of their blood. No more. You don't get to drain blood anymore from the point of your employment. And
wait, from anybody?
From anyone except mortal enemies.
Even if they're
and
not a coworker? Okay.
Nemesis only. All right.
Nemesis only. So if we're in an engagement, like if we get in a fight with people who aren't really important, I still can't drain their blood and wear their face?
Well, okay. You get to drain blood if we are in combat and we get to a point where we have weakened our enemy to the point where we could pokeball them if they're that weak. If we scream up to the heavens and say, "Drain them," that's your cue. You flop, you clop, clip, clop in, and you drain them of their blood. I don't know where this is going.
Don't say clop. Okay, don't say clop.
I am going to warn you that I can only remember to do 4 tasks at any given time. So you're going to have to choose between 4 different moves.
What?
We're mixing a lot right now.
Also, I just remembered the cult thing, which I think has a lot of larger implications for the world.
We're a cult. It's fine.
Yeah, everything's a cult.
Was that a chess thing?
Live long enough to join a cult or be killed by a cult.
Is it a video game thing? You can only remember 4 things?
It's a Pokemon
things?
Thing.
Oh, it's a Pokemon thing.
They can only have 4
thing.
Moves.
Okay. I guess.
Well, yeah. Well, okay, so we're going to have the blood-sucking pony?
I'm hesitant simply but only because of simply because of the fan art implications of adding a pony. But I suppose they're already
a long beard.
In this world. Maybe the can has already been opened and it's just there now and there's a pony here.
I know I've already cast my vote as a yes, and we're not allowed to change our votes. That's
fair.
Canon. So please outvote me.
I'm just so scared, so deeply scared of what would happen if this pony were to meet Otto Van Von Veen.
See, it didn't happen until you said it. And now, once again, we are at Schrodinger's fan art. Until you have spoken it and have made it exist, it didn't exist before. In the same way, this is person is not a pony. I just made it that way. It could appear as anything to anyone. But because we have spoken it aloud, we have made it true. Boy, this is a long one, huh?
But we're covering a lot of really important, fertile ground that I'm sure is going to matter a lot in the future.
I guess.
In what situation?
In a situation when we stumble onto a group of religiously zealous, blood-sucking, multicolored horses that can wear the skin and face of a man.
Huh.
Like me, Raspberry.
All right.
You know what?
Do you need hay or some shit?
I prefer oats.
Ugh,
oh, okay.
I've got sugar cubes.
Mm.
Those are the only sort of 3 things that we know that horses eat.
Apples.
Grass?
They do eat apples. Do horses eat grass?
I guess so. I think they might.
What
you
is hay?
Know.
What is hay?
That's
hay is grass dried.
Okay.
I think.
Is it?
It always feels long compared to what grass
like
is
tall
in my head.
Grass.
Hmm.
Boy, this won't end, huh?
Yeah, fun to learn how good we do in an apocalypse.
Oh, V-bad. V-bad.
Well, I think all things considered, we're doing okay in this one that we're living in, you know.
Yeah, so far, podcasting still useful.
What else are you going to do?
Could always drain the blood of a man and wear his face.
I vote no on the horse.
Well, that's two against one.
Great.
Nice day!
Campaign Skyjacks is a one-shot network production. For more information, be sure to follow us on Twitter at @CampaignPod for updates about live shows and other events we might be doing. You can find more great gaming shows over at oneshotpodcast.com. Like OneShot. Take it from me, heroes, the most fun way to learn about new games is to listen to them get played. Every week on OneShot, I, your host, James D'Amato, bring you actual play recordings with a talented cast of improvisers, game designers, and other notable nerds. Each month features a new group trying a new system, exploring a wide variety of genres. The stories are self-contained, so you can jump in anywhere. And it's a great way to find new games. Discover the magic of RPGs with One Shot on your favorite podcast app. Jonet Kessler was played by Tyler Davis, who can be found on Twitter and Instagram at @TylerADave. Gable was played by Liz Anderson, who can be found on Twitter at @LizAnderson_... or on her podcast, Paired. Travis Madigo was played by Johnny O'Mara, who can be found on Twitter at @JohnnyInBriefs or on his podcast, Dilettante Ball. I am James D'Amato, your host and game master. You can find me on Twitter at OneShotRPG or on my other podcast, One Shot. The original music featured in this production was composed and performed by Arnie Parrott. You can find Arnie on Twitter at @ArnePArrott. And you can find more of his work at atptunes.com. This episode was edited by Casey Tony, who can be found on Twitter at Casey Pony, spelled CaseyPoney, or on his own podcast, Neoscum. Our logo was designed by Fiona Shea, who can be found on Twitter at @FionaPup. The world of Sphere was inspired in part by the music of the Decemberists and the card game Illimat, property of Together Studios. The game used in this production is a modified version of the Genesis role-playing system that was created by a talented group of game designers who were fired by a private equity firm owning Fantasy Flight Games. There are no kings. Take flight, heroes.
Health to the strangers who've ever been kind, and once for our friends ne'er to rise. Twice to the dearest we're leaving behind, who know we can never deny the call of the sky.
In the universe of Starwall Odyssey, space is made out of the collective imaginations of all the thinking beings who live on various planets. These worlds are connected to each other through imagination. Common themes and ideas are strings between universes. And to get between them, people fly wooden ships that look like animals, which are powered by emotions. Also, people communicate with each other by contemplating orbs. The only way you can take pictures is getting stared at by a big psychic bug. And people have already declared victory in a war over the very concept of evil. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Starwall Odyssey follows the adventures of the hapless inhabitants of the Lucky Finn tenement building, who suddenly find that their apartment is actually a spaceship, and that they're lost in a sea of boundless imagination. It's an actual play starring me, James D'Amato, Mel D'Amato, Ali Grauer, and Drew Merzieski, as we playtest the No Kings system, which will hopefully one day be the Skyjacks role-playing system. It toes the line between weird and wonderful slice of life and high-flying space fantasy. You can sample the first 5 episodes by searching for Starwall Odyssey on your favorite podcast app, or get the whole thing by heading to patreon.com/oneshotpodcast and signing up for $5 a month or more.